Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is love more, fear less. And the numbers to call are 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Outside the United States and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. We'll get you into the queue. And why would you call? Well, you'd call if you've got questions. You'd call if you want coaching. You'd call if there's something in your own life that you'd like to explore, how you could love more and fear less in that, how you could create more meaning, more purpose, more impact in your life, how you could transform your relationship with fear, and how you can unleash the love that, and yeah, you know, I'm realizing this, it's like, oh, I think I sound like my own brochure here, but yeah, you know, to unleash the love that's just waiting for you inside. So, I'll set the table as always. And, I do realize sometimes I get emails from people going, you set the table and then you never stop for calls, but we'll get you in. Here, when the title for the show, so the way this works is Hay House asked me for the titles for the shows, usually about a month and a half ahead of time, sometimes 2 months. And I usually stall and squirm and apologize and get them to them about a couple weeks before they need them. And part of the reason I do that is because I'm obviously lazy and I procrastinate. But the other reason, and there is another reason, is because I like to speak to what is alive for me in the moment, because I speak impromptu, I speak off the cuff. So, it goes best when it's something that I'm actually really sitting in, when we're sitting together doing the show. And sometimes it's slightly predictable. So last weekend, I spent the weekend with Anita Morjani. A lot of you will know Anita, I'm sure. Actually, most of you will know Anita, both from her Hay House show, from her book, Dying to Be Me, from her book, What If This Is Heaven? And she's an extraordinary woman with an extraordinary story. She would say, I'm an ordinary woman with an extraordinary story. But, you know, we'll quibble. We'll agree to disagree. But I kind of knew that over the weekend that we were teaching together, we would be talking a lot about love and about fear. The weekend was called Experiencing God. And it was pretty amazing. And we're going to be putting clips and sections from it as part of the Experiencing God online program. And you can find out more about that at michaelneal.org/experiencinggod. So I knew we'd be talking a lot about love and fear. And one of the things that is said a lot, it said, I was listening to the radio before I came on and Gabrielle Bernstein was playing, and she teaches a lot from A Course in Miracles. And one of the things about A Course in Miracles, one of the notions in there is that love is the opposite of fear. And I noticed in the little blurb, I was talking to a friend just before coming on, and we were reading the blurb together, and they said, well, you know, is love the opposite of fear? And I said, we're going to have to wait for the show to find out. And I kind of meant it, because I always think with these clever catechisms, with these really cool phrases and catchphrases, that it's worth looking to see, is it true? And for me, here's what I see about the relationship between love and fear. And look for yourself. See if what you see is similar. There is more love present when fear is absent. There is less availability of love when I'm filled with fear. Now, does that mean they're opposites? Well, the image that comes to me is light and dark. Because most people say, well, light is the opposite of dark. Dark is the opposite of light. But from a physics perspective, dark is what we call the absence of light. And if we metaphor that across, that would suggest that fear is what we call the absence of love. Now, I don't know if that's completely true, right? I just being honest. I like it. I think there's a lot in it. I don't know if I was writing a dictionary that that's exactly how I would put it. But one of the things that is very apparent to me is that as I have become less fearful, and I'll be happy to talk about how I've become less fearful over the years, because I definitely spent huge chunks of my life as a hugely fearful person, I found life so much easier. I found myself so much more available to the moment, available to love, available to life, that whether or not we can go, yes, this is the opposite of this, I can say with absolute duh certainty, if you haven't heard of duh certainty, that's like duh, like of course, right? It's a, I guess, what my teenagers say. But, you know, I can say with absolute certainty, life is so much better without fear. And life is so much richer with love. So then the question becomes, okay, well, that seems true, right? That seems true to me. How do I get it? Like, how do I get less of the fear and more of the love? Well, part of the cool thing is because they are sort of inversely proportional, like the more love, the less fear, the more fear, the less love, up to a point. You can go at it whichever way it comes. So in shamanics, they say there are two paths to God. There are two paths to enlightenment, to health. The path of the warrior and the path of the heart. And sometimes it's the path of the sorcerer and the path of the adventurer. And sometimes it's, you know, the path of this, the path of strength and the path of power and the path of love. There's different ways that they're talked about. And what they say is, so that while the paths are very different, the outcome is the same. And the image that I have for it is if you came to a mountain, the base of a mountain, and there were two trails, and one went off to the right and one went off to the left. And they looked very different. One of them looked like a sort of a meandering path, and the other looked like a steep climb. But if you followed both paths, you would wind up on the other side of the mountain. You'd wind up, they come back together on the far side of the mountain. And once you're on the far side of the mountain, whether you got there via the path of power or the path of love, the path of the warrior or the path of the adventurer, nobody would know. So they get to the same place. So the path of the warrior is the path of conquering fear, right? It's the path of destroying fear. Fear is the mind killer, and we must overcome it, of seeing through it, of penetrating it, of defeating it. Maybe even of befriending it, but it is a companion on the path. It is an obstacle on the path. The path of love is about love, and fear may show up, it may not. It's almost incidental. We're just looking for a deeper experience of love. We're looking for a deeper experience of possibility, a deeper experience of spirit, a deeper experience of God. Now again, so is the path of the warrior. But it's just a different way to get there. So for me, what I found, and this is me, that when I tried to take on fear, fear got bigger. When I tried to conquer fear, fear got stronger. When I tried to be more courageous, I found I could often, but my life was still filled with fear. I just was winning. It was an ongoing battle. When I looked in a different direction, when I looked to the nature of the mind, the nature of God, the nature of spirit, I found myself at times feeling oddly disoriented, almost empty, which was an odd feeling. Now, it wasn't an unpleasant empty. It wasn't a existential angsty empty. It was just an absence of. And what I realized again and again is, oh, it's an absence of fear. I'm so used to living fearfully that when it's not present, it's slightly disorienting. It's slightly disconcerting. It's great. But I kept wondering, like, well, where'd it go? Where'd it go? Where'd it go? And of course, I could get it back, right? But the thing is, I remember asking one of my mentors about this, and it wasn't actually even about me. I was asking about, because I was working with clients, and I was just showing them the nature of thought, how thought creates feeling, how we live in a thought-created experience of life, but we think we live in the world, and the world is making us feel happy, and the world is making us feel bad, and the world is scaring us. But that's not how we work. So I was working with people in this way, and literally problems that people had brought to me that they'd had for 30 years, 40 years, were disappearing in the space of a conversation. And I, as far as I knew, I wasn't even doing anything. Like, I used to do stuff to help people. I was just talking about what seemed true to me, what I had seen to be true about the mind and the nature of our experience and who we are. And one of my teachers said, well, the reason that something that's been there for so long can just disappear out of nothing is because it was never really there in the first place. We just thought it was. Now, I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but that was profound for me. The reason fear can seem so all-encompassing in one moment and literally just not even be there in the next is because it's not real. The feeling in your body's real, but there's nothing causing it other than thought in the moment, this ephemeral quality of the mind, this energy that comes and goes. It has no object permanence. Disappears the second you stop thinking about it. Now, this is fear as most of us experience it, right? If there really is a tiger, there is a physiological response in the body, a quickening, a shot of adrenaline, a whole bunch of things happen, a whole bunch of processes change in the body so that you can fight or flee or do something. But we live in a really safe world. There are really few tigers in most of our lives. But we have so much tiger thinking. And when that tiger thinking stops looking real, even if it hasn't gone away, it just starts looking like thought and not real. It starts looking like a dream and not reality. It starts looking like a movie and not a documentary. We're free. It just goes. Because the length of a feeling is the length of a thought. So I'll talk more about this, but I did say I would actually go to the phone. So I'm going to begin on the phones in Orange County with Patricia. Patricia, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello, Michael. This is the first call I've ever made into Hay House.
Welcome.
And I had the pleasure of being at your conference over the weekend.
Oh, you're
and
that,
as
Patricia.
I said, it was my first conference, and it was the most amazing. There are not temporal words to express what I felt. But I think one of the most dramatic points for me was at the end of the first day when you gave us our homework assignment. And you said to know you, YA, and experience God. And then Anita said, you cannot get it wrong. And I know that is such a simple concept. But for me, I realized that I was clinging on to cultural things of obeying rules, you know, and mm-hmm. it was absolutely life-changing for me. I've been so filled that I've had a love and exuberance for life I've never had. But I do have a little fear. And I don't want to fear fear, but I don't want to retreat into what I was before. And I have a fear of losing that after that high. But most of all, I just wanted to thank you for everything. And I had the pleasure of meeting your wife at the end of the conference and had a wonderful conversation with her. And would you give her my love?
I absolutely will. Thank you so much for phoning in, Patricia.
Thank you for being you, Michael, and for everything.
So I'm going to speak a little to what Patricia was speaking about. And if you're on hold, just hang on. I'm going to get back to callers, but I want to take a little bit of time with this, because what Patricia was pointing to, I think there were two things she said that are really helpful. One is you don't want to get scared of fear, right? And again, if you understand where fear comes from, right? We think scary things usually about the future, and they seem real to us. And then we kind of start doing things in the present to avoid them. And it messes us up. You know, we get so worried, oh God, what if this happens? That we start doing things trying to avoid that happening, which inadvertently often cause it to happen. Now, not automatically, right? You know, if fear worked automatically, if fear really created, if our thoughts really automatically created what we're thinking about, then the number one cause of death in the world would probably be something like, you know, roller coasters going off the tracks, right? Because everybody on the roller coaster is afraid of that, but somehow it doesn't happen, right? So fear is a label that we put on a feeling, right? It's a word that we use to describe a feeling of mild or severe dread of imaginary futures that don't look imaginary to us. Again, I'm distinguishing this from if there's a tiger right in front of you and there's no cage and he looks hungry, right? That might be cause for a physiological response in the body as part of the survival mechanism of our biology. But short of the tiger, right? Absent the tiger, you're feeling thought. We're feeling thought. And when we know that, it doesn't instantly make the fear go away any more than if I realize that the source of the pain in my foot is the gun I keep shooting into it. Right? As long as I keep shooting the gun into my foot's going to hurt. But if I know that's why my foot hurts, at some point I'm going to stop shooting the gun. If I know the reason I'm feeling that dread is because I keep imagining horrible futures or futures I just don't want and thinking, oh God, yeah, what if? And then I better avoid that, or I better try not to have that happen. It keeps us stuck in our head. It keeps us stuck in the source of the fear. And so the fear stays and it seems more and more and more real. But it was never real. It's just what it feels like when you think about imaginary futures that you don't like. Right? I was talking to somebody today and they were talking about having a child diagnosed with autism. And the fear. Well, the fear wasn't to do with the child. They love the child. The child is happy, like they described. He's so alive. Just doesn't seem to like other people, being around other people, communicating and connecting to other people. Right? The fear is, yeah, but what if? What's it going to be like? What if I have to explain this to somebody? What if I have to justify this? What if it's this bad now? Imagine how bad it will be when. And that feels like it's about the future. But those thoughts are happening in the present. So we think fear is telling us about the future, but it's just the feeling of what we're thinking right now. It is the feeling of thought in the moment. That's what we're designed to feel. And really interestingly, when that thinking settles down, when it quiets, when we don't give it more than it's due, when it comes in and goes without our active participation, what we're left with is love. What we're left with is a feeling of aliveness. What we're left with is pure energy, without the flavor of dread, without the flavor of fear. What we're left with is love. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Florida and let's speak with Julie. Julie, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi.
Hey.
I just wanted to talk about the fear. I moved to Florida in February, and I've just been dealing with fear like ever since. And I don't leave the house, and I'm 5 minutes from the beach, and I don't go to the beach. And sorry if I get teary, because it's just very debilitating.
Yeah, no, it is. Right? It's nobody above the age of two ever has somebody prescribe fear. Right? When we're little, right, sometimes we prescribe fear to our kids. You need to be more scared of running into traffic and things like that. But we kind of intuitively know beyond that point that fear isn't good for us. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't keep us safe.
Right.
It doesn't prepare us for actual handling things, actual things in life. It's what muddles up our innate built-in health, our innate built-in wisdom, our innate built-in capacity to not just handle things, but to create them. Now, for you, is this something that started when you moved? Or something that just...
Actually, it started like 3 years ago, but I got through it and I went to work and, you know, I did okay, and it started probably about like 3 years ago, but now this has been the worst ever.
And was there a kind of an obvious triggering thing, or did it just start?
Probably my dad. My dad passed in 2015.
Okay.
I think that's probably where it started from, because, you know, I'm very spiritual and all that stuff, and I know and I believe in all this stuff. I have all the tools, so I still go back to the fear. I don't know why, but I do.
So I'm curious, and it's what's the connection in your mind, you know, being spiritual and all that stuff, between your dad passing and the fear showing up? Is he haunted? And I don't mean this disrespectfully, but I mean, is he haunting you?
No. I feel lost.
Oh, okay.
It's like a lost feeling without him, because I was really close to him. And right. Ever since he passed, I had a lot of sadness and grief and fear.
Right.
And anxiety and where to go with my life.
And so he was sort of a touchstone for you, an anchor, somebody you could check in with about things like that?
Yeah, because he's very like-minded like me, and my family isn't. It's kind of tough, you know?
Yeah. So here's what I've seen, and I'll speak to it, and you let me know if it sounds true. Like, if because of the world we live in, which it looks like our experience comes from the outside, right? It looks like what's going on in our lives causes what's going on inside us. And if different stuff's going on inside, it will cause something different, right?
Right.
We also look outside for our strength and comfort. So like if one thing outside can make me uncomfortable or can make me scared or can make me happy, then something else outside can make it better. Right? Because if the world worked that way, that there'd be a logic to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the way we actually are designed, us humans, we have these sort of three, I'll call them spiritual gifts. I don't know what they are, but we have these three capacities. We have an intelligence, access to an intelligence that's before our brain, before our intellect, before whatever we've learned, right? It's
right.
An in-the-moment, responsive, alive wisdom. We have consciousness, which is this capacity to experience and understand life, right? To actually have experiences, because without consciousness, you know, there's that old thing, if a tree falls in the forest but no one hears it, does it really fall? Well, a better version of that philosophical conundrum is, if a tree falls in the forest but human beings have no consciousness, nobody would ever know, right? Consciousness is what lets us experience life. And then we have this third gift, and it's a neutral gift, right? It's called thought. And it creates heaven and hell on a daily basis.
Yes.
Right. So now you're laughing. What are you hearing in that? What are you recognizing?
Thought. It can really hurt you.
Well, it can really seem like it hurts you. Right. All it can do is kind of make you feel bad.
Yes.
Right. Or it can uplift you.
Right.
Right. It can create terrifying scenarios of imaginary futures, or it can create incredibly hopeful scenarios of imaginary futures. It can bring back things from the past in a way that makes us very sad. It can bring things back from the past in a way that makes us feel very empowered and hopeful. Right. It's a completely neutral gift. And the problem is, not only... Okay, so I'm going to go, are you okay with me going a little bit left if I try to come back after?
Yeah.
Okay. So I gave a talk about this at Netflix last week. And I was talking to people in the visual effects department. And one of them said, "Oh, yeah, it's like us. Like thought and consciousness are like what we do. We write computer code that puts lines and shapes on a computer, and it has to work so well that people have an actual emotional reaction to it as if it's real. Like if they can see that it's just visual effects, we failed at our job." And that's thought, right? Thought and consciousness work together, like the VFX team at Netflix, to make it seem so real that even though it's a movie, right, even though it's made of thought, we experience it as if it's really happening in real time.
Right.
And what we're up against is, because we don't know that's what's going on, we get stuck in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the glorious thing about us is we have that intelligence. We have that capacity to see. Which means that in any moment we can wake up to the fact that it's a movie. That it's thought. And not a real thing that we are stuck in. Because the nature of thought is change. Right? Thought's the most fluid substance in the universe. Like if you actually just go inside your head for a minute, like you will be freaked out at how many weird things you think about. Like I did it. I actually did it as an experiment. I've got a new version of the book Supercoach coming out, because I rewrote it to kind of bring it in line with what I've seen in the 10 years since I wrote it. And I literally was embarrassed. It was like, I thought about rabbits. I thought about baseball. I thought about sex. And then I thought, oh God, I can't write down that I'm thinking about sex, because that's such a cliche. Then I thought about rabbits again. Like it was just nutty. But that's kind of the fun of it too.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Is right,
that,
right.
That it changes. It fluctuates like crazy.
Right. It does, for sure.
So I promised I'd try and bring it back around. So here's why so many of us have an experience, you know, maybe not as extreme sometimes, but maybe more extreme sometimes when we lose somebody that has been a rock for us, that has been a touchstone for us. Part of it is just we miss them, right?
Yeah. Oh, God. Without a doubt. You know,
that's legit. Like, that's not a problem. That's kind of gorgeous in its own way. But part of it is that we at some level thought they were the source of our comfort and well-being and wisdom. But the source of our comfort and ease and wisdom and well-being is this wisdom within. It is this connection to life. It is the aliveness in us. And that doesn't go anywhere. It just changes forms.
Trying to get that back.
You never. Well, here's the funny thing, Julie. You never lost it. It's just really hard to see it because the Netflix is on so loud.
You got that right.
You know, but if you know that's what's going on, and I'm telling you that's what's going on, you'll notice your nose is still right where it always was. Right between your eyes.
Mm.
Right? And your well-being and wisdom are right where they've always been, at the heart of who you are.
Right.
And that's what we'll see you through. And even if that at some point shows up in the form of another form, another wise soul, or 10 wise souls, it's still your wisdom. It's the same thing that is inside you. It just sometimes shows up in somebody else to make it easier to hear.
That's interesting.
And you know that because you recognize it when it comes.
Okay.
So tell me how that lands, because it sounds like you're kind of hearing something helpful.
Well, you know, it's just when you talk to people or people talk to you, they say something and it just kind of resonates. Like, like you said about just a movie, and the movie got louder and louder and louder and louder and louder and louder. And you got to shut it down. You got to go back to the love part of it. You got to go back to your joy. But it's easier said than done.
Well, so here's the thing, Julie. You don't even have to shut it down, right? Like, I couldn't, not that I would, right? But like, I couldn't shut Netflix down, but I don't always have to be tuned into it, even if it's on. At some point, even if it's like I don't live in that kind of complex, but like I've stayed in hotels and lived in complexes where like somebody in the next room has the TV on really loudly.
Yeah.
Right. I may or may not be able to get them to turn off the TV, but at some point, if I let myself, my brain will tune it out. It just becomes, and I won't even notice it till somebody else comes in the room and goes, "What the hell is that?" And you're like, "Oh God, oh yeah, I stopped hearing that for a minute. It's the TV next door," and then I get all wound up again. But we're made to tune it out once we see it for what it is. Like, as long as we think it's indicative of something real, of course we're going to pay attention to it. Like, no, I think that's a tiger, right? You want to keep paying attention to the tiger, the real tiger.
Mm-hmm.
But the second we realize, oh God, the guy next door is watching tigers on National Geographic, right? Our brain immediately just moves it to a different location. And then we're there. So here's the beauty of how well we're made. We don't have to do it. As soon as we see it, it's a done deal. It starts to shift all by itself.
I'm waiting.
Well, I think
waiting
that's
for that shift.
No, but look, here's the thing, Julie. As long as you don't wait too tightly, like, you know, it's been 5 minutes, right? You know what I mean? It's because it's almost like the watch pot never boils. It's like, as long as it's still in your foreground, it's. But the second you forget about it for a minute, whoosh,
right?
And then you don't even have to worry about it coming back, because all that means is you started noticing it again.
Yeah.
And that's why it's kind of cool when you turn your attention to love, when you turn your attention to fun, when you turn your attention to kind of anything, then that just becomes background.
Right.
So what I'd love is if you phone back in whenever you want, and let me know how it goes, and let me know how you're doing, and we'll talk more.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
You too. We're all, in a funny way, in exactly the same boat. Right? We all have this intelligence, this aliveness in us, this deeper mind, this spark. We all have the capacity for experience, and we all have the infinite creativity generator, right? The power of thought. The differences in our lives are what we do with them. Now, part of that, and I think the reason that this whole area of thought can get so muddled up, is we're not as in control of thought as we like to think we are. That's my experience, right? I don't know about you, but short of actively affirming things 24/7, all sorts of thoughts come to mind regularly, and even things I don't recognize as thought, but I can tell something's going on because my feelings are going all over the place. But the funny thing is, when we see that we are not in control of our thinking, when we allow ourselves freedom of mind so that anything can pass through our mind, this deeper wisdom, this underlying intelligence, brings us purer thinking. It brings us cleaner air. It brings fresh thought to the surface. And the kind of old, habitual, stale thought starts to kind of spill over and wash away. It's the beauty of the design. It's like a psychological immune system that just brings us what we need when we need it. If we don't cling to the old thought, new thought comes. If we don't cling to the fear, we find ourselves in love, in the feeling of love, in the experience of love. Not romantic love, necessarily. In fact, usually not. Just that deep feeling that you can feel when you're sitting across from somebody, when you're looking into the eyes of a baby, when you're, I got puppies here right now, so like it's hard for me not to feel love because there's such a reflection of the love that's already inside us. The puppy's not making me feel anything. I've got one of my early students turned colleagues, a guy named Jamie Smart, has a great analogy about teddy bears. You know, and he says, you know, when we're little, we think our teddy bear is keeping us safe. We think our teddy bear is why we feel love. We feel so good when we have our teddy bear. Now, as an adult, we can look at that and go, oh, that's sweet. They've projected that. The kid has projected that power into the teddy bear, that sense of comfort and safety and freedom and fun and love is all in the kid, but they're projecting onto the teddy bear so they can kind of interact with it. Well, we do that all the time as adults. We just tend to do it with living things instead of inanimate things. But it's the same game. It may be your partner who's your teddy bear. It may be your parent who's your teddy bear. It may be your child who's your teddy bear. It may be your job that's your teddy bear. It may be your bank balance that's your teddy bear. And the only problem with it is nothing wrong with doing it until you start to believe that the teddy bear is actually the source of your well-being, the source of your love, the source of your safety, the source of your freedom, because then you start fearing losing the teddy bear. Oh my God, what if something happens to the teddy bear? What if the teddy bear gets old? What if the teddy bear breaks? What if somebody steals the teddy bear? And now I have to live my whole life in fear of losing the teddy bear. But if I get that I can have the best of both worlds, I can get all that gorgeous feeling that I've projected into the teddy bear. But if the teddy bear goes, I've still got the feelings. I've still got the source of the feelings because they were inside me all along. They are, in fact, I'm going to go a step further. The love bit, like the spiritual stuff, like the love bit, that's our nature. That is what God feels like. That is what life feels like. That is the nature of life itself. How could you lose that? How can you lose the very thing that you're made of? When Patricia was on earlier and speaking about her experience on the seminar with Anita and I on the Experiencing God seminar, the reason that the homework, which was be yourself and experience God, the reason you can't get that wrong is because you are yourself. And in the sense that we're talking about it here, you are God. So when you are yourself, you are God. So being yourself is experiencing God. Well, how do I be myself? Well, you can't get it wrong, right? Whatever you do, that's you. Now, that's not you definitively like, oh, I'm this kind of person, I'm that kind of person. It's just, we're all we got. Right? We can express in a million different ways and it's still us. And we can judge ourselves 50 ways to Sunday and it's still us. You can no more not be you than a fish can be a bicycle. And when you relax into that, when you stop trying so hard to be a certain way, the version of you you think would be socially approved, the version of you that you think is the right one, well, then you experience your true nature at a deeper level. You experience love more. You experience God more. You experience spirit more. You experience aliveness more. You experience life more. And here's the thing. So this was cool. So Anita and I, I will do one more plug for it, but it's michaelneal.org/experiencinggod. You can actually watch a bunch of videos from the program. You can actually do a whole lesson on love and fear. Just by going to the website. But one of the conversations that Anita and I had over the course of the weekend is somebody was asking us about fear. And the way I answered it was kind of the way that you and I are talking about it right now, right? I talked about how the nature of fear, that fear came from thought, and that when you start to see it for what it is, it's not that it immediately goes, because like, you know, okay, I was talking about shooting yourself in the foot, but like, okay, I'm going to ask you to do something weird. Grab the, like just under the fingernail of your index finger. So just like, and squeeze it with the other hand. Now, if you do that, probably it's going to hurt a bit. So obviously don't do it like stupid, but just do it enough that you can feel it. And now tell yourself, oh God, my finger hurts because of the economy. My finger hurts because of what happened at work yesterday. My finger hurts because of what the guy on the radio said. Right? Well, you can kind of feel that none of those things are true. Now tell yourself, my finger hurts because I'm squeezing it. Well, if you're playing along, you notice that telling yourself that you're squeezing it is true, but it doesn't make it stop hurting. It only stops hurting when you let it go. But the second you let it go, it feels different. There's a feeling of space around it. There's a feeling of lightness around it that comes back. The feeling comes back. The aliveness in it comes back when you stop squeezing it out. Well, it's a metaphor for how we do it, right? We We squeeze the life out of ourselves with our thinking. We get so caught up in the detail of our thinking, trying to control our thinking, trying to make things happen in our thinking, that we totally lose sight that the very thing we want, that feeling of love, that feeling of aliveness, is sitting there underneath all the thinking. And it's ironic, or at least it would be if it didn't hurt. Because that's the problem, right? Beer kind of hurts. Now, some people really like it, right? I've met adrenaline junkies, and they love the feeling of fear. But see, that version of fear isn't that scary, right? That version of fear is just kind of exciting. And they can still call it fear, but it's kind of like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, this is going to be, my heart is thumping, and I'm like... I remember an old interview with Bruce Springsteen. I was a big Springsteen fan in the 80s and 90s. And I remember somebody asking him if he ever got scared before he went on stage. And he said, no, not really, man. And so, oh, really? Well, that's like, because, you know, he was playing stadiums, you know, and things like that. And they go, well, what do you feel? And he goes, well, you know, my heart starts thumping a mile a minute and my hands kind of go numb and I start sweating a little, and I kind of, my throat tightens up a little bit, and I find a little bit hard to breathe, and I'm listening to this thinking, yeah, fear, 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 and he goes, yeah, and my throat tightens up, and I know I'm ready. It's going to be a great concert. Well, see, that's kind of cool, too. Now, I'm not saying pretend your fear isn't fear, it's excitement. He wasn't pretending. He didn't make up a story about those sensations in his body meaning anything about the future. Right? He just experienced them. Well, we can just experience what's going on inside us. We don't have to do anything with it. We don't have to fix it. We don't have to improve it. We don't have to make it better. And the funny thing is, when you allow yourself freedom of thought, so not trying to control my thinking, just letting whatever thinking comes through, come through. When we allow ourselves freedom of feeling, hey, you know what? Sometimes I'm going to feel this thing I'm calling fear. That's okay. Sometimes I'm going to feel this thing Bruce Springsteen calls excitement. That's okay. Sometimes I'm going to feel pure love. That's okay. Well, when we allow ourselves that freedom, we're free. And when we don't allow ourselves that freedom, when we get caught up in trying to control it, then we're stuck to it. I just like the old story about, you know, the I think it was the tar baby in the Brer Rabbit stories, right? That when you put one hand on it, right, then you use another hand to try and get the first hand off, but now you got both hands stuck on it. And then you try and use your feet to get your hands off, and now you got your feet stuck on it. Right? The more you go in there trying to control it, the more stuck to it you are. The more willing you are for it to do its thing, not only do you find that this self-correcting mechanism, the psychological immune system, brings you fresh thought and fresh feeling, but you also find all sorts of other things start to occur to you. Let's try and sneak in one more call. Let's go out to New York and let's talk with Laura. Laura, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. I kind of was listening and, you know, I'm hesitant to say it out loud. I mean, fear, I grew up with so much fear in my house, my mother, and it permeates my life. But where it really hurts me the most is I have a phobia, and it's being in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And I've fought it for the last 15 or 20 years, and I've kind of figured a way to be in the car, but I was in the car the other day with my husband, and he said, what do you think is going to happen to you? And when you talk about thought and it being real or not real, the cars certainly on the road are real. The people that don't know how to drive everywhere is real. People weaving in and out and speed is real. So I know it's my thought, and what's the worst that could happen to me is I'll die in the car or something will happen. But I don't know how to fight that. I don't know how to fight it. I close my eyes.
So how would you, Laura, how would you fight a scary shadow?
Well, a shadow is a scary shadow. So if something's reflecting and it's a real shadow, it means it's something that's real.
Right, but I'm saying the shadow part.
The shadow part. You can't. The shadow part is not the part that's real. It's who's reflecting the shadow.
Okay, but have you ever seen, like, I don't know where you live. If I just remember this from growing up, like a really scary shadow that turns out to just be the way the curtain is in the window.
I kind of wasn't scared of the dark and stuff like that, so I can't really relate to that, but
yeah,
kind of know what
like
you're talking about.
You know, a toy in the window that when when the moonlight comes through it, it looks like a, you know, I had a teddy bear once that did that, looked like a kind of a giant bear.
Yeah, I kind of know because I see that in the movies where I get so scared. I don't remember being that way.
So
I just remember, I don't know, my mother, if it rained outside,
I know. You get the idea.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So the reason that trying to fight a fear is kind of futile is because the fear is the shadow of a thought. Now, I want to make a distinction. Safety and danger, right? Those might exist in the world, right? Now, I don't remember the statistics. I do remember that one statistic that, like, you're more likely statistically to be kicked to death by a donkey than die in a plane crash was one thing that I read the stats on that was just kind of weird. You know, so I'm not suggesting that there is no danger in cars, right? But that's not the source of fear. Fear is the shadow of thought. It's a fundamentally different source. So it's going to change because of something different. It's not going to change because cars suddenly become any safer or less safe. It's going to change because different thinking starts to look real to you. And whatever thinking we have that looks real to us, that's what we experience. Whatever the Netflix movie is, that's what we experience. And even if the Netflix movie is based on a true story, we're scared of the movie, not the true story. Mm-hmm. Now, what I'd love to do, have you read The Inside Out Revolution?
I have it here.
Oh, okay.
I have it in the house. I, you know, have never read through it. I've been following you for 5 years. And this is probably the third time I've called into you. I'm from Queens, New York. I know a lot of people call in, but I've kind of lost touch with you. And I do have it in the house. Yes, I do.
Right.
So I could read it.
So that's going to be my request, Laura, is read it through and then phone back and let's talk more.
Thank you so much. I know I called at the end. Thank you, Michael. You're wonderful.
Right,
I really appreciate it. Thanks.
No problem.
Okay.
And look, if you're going through something like Laura is or like Janet was, and you're kind of caught up in fear right now, the best thing I would say to you is, you know, and it sounds stupid as it's, I'm hearing it in my head before I say it out loud. Don't worry about it, right? Sometimes we get scared, right? Sometimes we get caught in fear. Sometimes it feels insurmountable. You don't need to beat it. The funny thing is, it's almost the opposite. As you kind of relax about it, you're going to go, oh God, okay, I'm really scared. That which is within you, the love within you, the wisdom within you, the clarity within you, will take care of it for you. Your help is not required. Your nature is love. MichaelNeal.org/experiencinggod if you want to learn more about the program. Thank you for being with me. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.